Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, sort of, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, we talked about this a lot last month, but so much has happened in the intervening 6 weeks or so that there hasn't been much attention lately on the president's announcement in mid-December that he intends to pursue normal diplomatic relations with Cuba. So he decided that we're going to reopen embassies. He wants Congress to lift travel and trade embargoes, but that's not good enough for the Cubans. This is from the Associated Press. Cuban President Raul Castro demanded Wednesday that the United States return the U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay, lift the half-century trade embargo on Cuba, and compensate his country for damages before the two nations reestablish normal relations. Castro told a summit of the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States that Cuba and the U.S. are working toward full diplomatic relations, but, quote, if these problems aren't resolved, this diplomatic rapprochement wouldn't make any sense, unquote. No comment, Jim, from the State Department at this point on those demands. We understand there are high-level discussions with the administration, his national security team, and as well as current and former high-ranking military officials. The only one of those folks going on record right now is the former commanding officer of ground troops from the Marine Corps at Guantanamo, Colonel Nathan Jessup, who some may remember got forced out of that position due to an unfortunate public hazing incident in the early 1990s. But during this discussion, he was asking the president if, in fact, he wanted an honest evaluation or he just wanted answers that would allow the president's agenda to move forward. The president insisted he wanted the truth, which led to this exchange.
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Folks, if you haven't figured it out yet, that's from A Few Good Men. But Jim, this is
Greg, bravo. Brilliant. Here's a couple other truths that this president can't handle. For starters, you don't negotiate with rotten, snotty, obnoxious terrorists. I'm trying not to do my Nicholson voice, but just kind of seeping in there. Look, when you make concessions to really bad regimes, they don't turn around and say, oh, okay, now here's our concession. No, they turn around, you extend your hand, and they bite it, okay? You know, we on the right aren't terribly surprised by this because we think of the Castro regime as the bad guys. The Obama administration is utterly convinced these guys are reasonable and that somehow we can just talk it out and all sing kumbaya. What's kind of striking about this is, look, we you know, everybody in the world can see what's happening here, all right? Obama really, 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 really wants to have this big dramatic diplomatic happy ending aspect to the U.S.-Cuba relations as part of his legacy. So he really desperately needs this. And Castro doesn't, neither Fidel nor Raul. So when you go into negotiations and you need a deal more than the other guy is just going to keep upping the ante to get as many concessions from you as possible. My suspicion is that the administration is going to do everything it can to do all of these things, including if he wants to already shut down Guantanamo Bay for keeping terrorists. I think Obama would be perfectly happy to give the military base back to the Cubans. I think he'd be perfectly happy to obviously, you know, end the trade deal. And I think if he could get away with it, he'd be very happy to make, you know, financial concessions. Now, the good news is we have a Republican Congress that can fight him on this. And I can't help get the feeling that anybody in America is really going to look at this and say, yeah, we haven't made enough concessions to these guys. We've really wronged the brutal dictator Raul Castro and his brother, and we need to give up more. So watching the Cuba deal blow up in the administration's face is a good martini for today, and that's a truth I can handle.
Yeah, very good, very good. All right, folks might have been wondering why that was a good martini, but you explained it very, very well. All right, on to the bad martini now, and this is courtesy of Politico, Mike Allen writing the story. Hillary Clinton, expecting no major challenge for the Democratic nomination, is strongly considering delaying the formal launch of her presidential campaign until July, 3 months later than originally planned. According to top Democrats, the delay from the original April target will give her more time to develop her message, policy, and organization without the chaos and spotlight of a public campaign. A Democrat familiar with Clinton's thinking said, quote, She doesn't feel under any pressure, and they see no primary challenge on the horizon. If you have the luxury of time, you take it. So, Jim, obviously, they didn't think they had much of a challenge 8 years ago either, and that kind of blew up in their face. This time, it looks like there's even less of a threat of that happening. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, there's probably going to be as many as a dozen candidates in this race sniping at each other while Hillary Clinton's on vacation till midsummer.
Yeah, I mean, you might see this as a delayed good martini in the sense that at some point Hillary Clinton has to enter the race. And when she does, her numbers will go down, right? I mean, a bit like we saw this Obama's numbers going up in December when he went on vacation. Certain figures see their numbers rise when they're out of the public spotlight. Being the Secretary of State is better for your numbers than being a partisan presidential candidate. Hillary Clinton knows this, and so she's going to push this off. And while, you know, the good news is eventually she'll have to become a political candidate, her numbers will go down, she'll start looking more political and less above the fray. You know, if she really does delay this to late spring, early summer, then it pretty much guarantees the next 6 months are going to be, you know, Republicans fighting with each other as the dominant political story. And while that can definitely be, you know, as strong supporters of primaries and believing we got to have these fights, we got to hash this out, I do think it starts very early on the Republican side. It starts, you know, already spending the money. It's very hard to believe that everybody's going to be touchy-feely and warm and fuzzy towards each other between now and June, particularly, let's say, like, you know, Rand Paul and Marco Rubio. Some of these guys who have already had very strong disagreements. So my suspicion is the Republican, this basically turns into Republicans starting their primary about 6 months before the Democrats do. And there are a bunch of negative consequences to that. Not fatal, kind of depends on everybody being on good behavior for the next couple of months, but I'm not optimistic about that. So I kind of have a feeling that the first half of this year is going to be dominated by stories of Republicans beating each other in over the head while Hillary Clinton keeps doing her extremely lucrative paid speeches and puts off the, you know, the nastiness of politics for another couple months.
On to the crazy martini now. And we talked about this a number of times last year, and that's the ethics case against former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and his estranged wife, Maureen. They were convicted late last year. You might have missed it given all the other news earlier in the week, but a federal court on appeal has essentially allowed the former governor to stay out of prison while his case is on appeal. And that's likely to be quite a while. And so this is from columnist Robert McCartney in The Washington Post. Virginians rightly disgusted by the sleazy behavior of ex-Governor Bob McDonnell need to brace for the possibility that he and his wife could eventually be fully cleared on appeal, even though they were convicted of a total of 19 corruption felonies. He then quotes a couple of attorneys from the area who deal with white-collar crime. One says, "This is an area of criminal defense law where it seems there's a pattern of the Supreme Court repeatedly telling lower courts, 'You got it wrong.' Another one says, 'There's a very good chance that the defense is going to win a reversal. This area of the law has been litigated over and over again and consistently gets reversed at the Supreme Court level when the government takes a very aggressive theory, as I believe it did here.'" So, Jim, you even had some folks upon conviction saying it was super sleazy, not sure what favors the office did. But when you're giving up the mansion for supplement demonstrations and taking Rolexes and letting them pay for your daughter's catering at the wedding, something's wrong here. And it looks like they're going to get away with it, or at least there's a decent chance they will.
It's very, very lucky for Governor McDonnell that his case is before Judge Emily Letella. Who will probably look at the entire conviction and say, never mind. What makes it crazy is that this has been one of the big stories of the last year, one of the most spectacular downfalls in American politics, deeply disappointing and infuriating slash enraging for those of us who are fans of Bob McDonnell. And his behavior, you know, indisputably sleazy, just embarrassing all around. He was convicted on a bunch of these charges. This was not, you know, an iffy, you know, circumstance. Whether the Virginia law is clear enough, if what the behavior that he and his wife and his family engaged in isn't covered by the law's restrictions on giving gifts to lawmakers, you wonder what the law is for. And I just think the idea of sudden dramatic reversals tend to undermine people's faith in the judgment of the system. If a ref in a football game is constantly having his calls overturned by the replay booth, people start to lose faith in that ref. Undoubtedly, Governor McDonnell deserves his day in court, and he's had his day in court, and he's gotten, you know, a pretty pretty tough judgment against him. The idea that at some point, you know, a higher court might say, well, you know, it's all really sleazy, but the law is kind of not clear, so you got to let him go. I think in a lot of people is going to be seen as a whitewash. And I think it very much fits our definition of crazy for today's crazy martini.
All right. Well, on that sobering note, Jim, we'll reconvene again tomorrow. Have a great day.
See you, Greg. By the way, let's try to keep sobering notes out of a three martini lunch.
That's right. It's kind of in conflict. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us on Friday for the next three martini lunch.